Discharge.
Discharge.
Translation. When the demigod named Brihaspati was attracted by his brother's wife, Mamata, who at the time was pregnant, he desired to have sexual relationships with her. The son within her womb forbids it, but Brihaspati cursed him and forcefully discharged semen into the womb of Mamata. Report. The sex impulse is so strong in this mature world that even Brihaspati, who is supposed to be the priest of the demigod and a very learned scholar, wanted to have sexual relationships with his brother's pregnant wife. This can happen even in the society of higher demigods. So what to speak of human society, the sex impulse is so strong that it can even agitate a learned personality like the husband. This is a pretty for our section of the Bible study. We're reading about first, we've been having discussions about the dynasty of the Puru, and here we have Maharaj Dushmata, who was a Maharaj. He meets Shankantala, and he becomes overwhelmed. He becomes overwhelmed by her attraction, becomes attracted by her captivated presence, and cannot control himself, takes her as a wife, has an affair, and then later leaves her. She gets pregnant, then she comes to his kingdom where he's seated, and he wants to deny her. And then the omen reveals that this is his child. So we have a consistent amount of irreligiosity, Chala Dharma, Isrupa Dharma, Adharma, so many things that go against religious principles. And then we have here, we're reading about Brihaspati, who is not only learned, but is a priest of the demigod, and not only is it a promiscuous arrangement, but it's his brother's own wife. Unbelievable. Now that's not all. Now we have how Maharaj Bhart, his own wife, brought forth children, three of them, and they were afraid because the children didn't look like him, that maybe he was going to see and consider them as being unchaste. Now the question is, were they unchaste or not? And even if they were not unchaste, why did they kill their son? It's abortion. Or it was because they were born. They didn't kill them in the womb. So unbelievable. And then, so we have Dushmanta trying to engage in irreligiosity, that he was trying to disown his own children, his own child. We have Brihaspati, who is learned and is a priest of the demigods, and he forces himself on his brother's wife, and of course doesn't say clearly to what degree that she accommodated. It just says that the son in the womb was against it. And so here he curses the son, and then he impregnates her, his own child. Unbelievable. Is there more? And this woman, Mamata, and Brihaspati, after they have the child, they both want to walk away from the child, abandon the kid. How do we understand all of this? Maybe one of you get the class this morning. There's several ways. First, we see there is a, we see that there is Varnashram Dhamma, there's Bhagavad Dhamma. We understand Abrahma Bhuvana Loka, the highest of material planets and lords, they are places of limitation and deviation, different degrees. Yidam Padam Natesham, we know that there's danger at every step. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka, that the lower planets have some trouble, medium, and even the higher, all the way up to the Brahma Loka. Or you have to start to look, or the six want to look. Then we hear that even Brahma chased after his own daughter with trying to pursue incest. Now why should we read this Bhagavad Gita? We don't have to go out and get the tabloid. So someone can think like that. Someone can think, well, if this goes on even in higher society in terms of entities are supposed to be more refined, then what is the hope for the present day, the present day Sanatana? And if this goes on in such circles, then what's the big deal? The deviations go on. Well, it's a big deal. One, we realize how amazing what Prabhupada gave us is that he was giving us a message far beyond anything having to do with the material arena. It's also a way of letting us understand that purity is sometimes rarer than we realize. And it also helps us to understand how much one can know and be deviant, how much one can even be connected with knowledge of Krishna and still not be consistent. And why there's a tremendous difference between the Sudha Bhakta and the person who is still engaged in Varnashram Dharma, or still engaged in trying to be a yogi, trying to be a jnani, trying to be a rishi. Is a huge difference. And it's where devotees have to understand. Because we can work for Krishna and there's benefit. We can work for Krishna and not follow anything. In 12th chapter, Krishna explains so many aspects. Always think of me. We can't do that and engage in the process. They give us a chance to think of him and to serve him. The whole process, Siddhana Bhakti, etc., etc. And we see that in the day-to-day society. We sometimes have people who give donations, who do work, who assist, but they don't really come that close. They're not sadhakas, and they're not ready, to even try to be sadhakas. So they get some benefit, and they go on. Next life, maybe they'll come into the devotee body where they can get more involved. But now we find someone like in the category of Brihaspati. And Brahma, what does it say of Indra? Our Indra is overwhelmed sometimes. We see an enviousness. So now do we say, okay, in present day society, we see somebody's been chanting for a long time, they're full of enviousness, somebody's been doing service and they're full of deviations, somebody's been doing this, doing that, they're full of aparads. Yeah, that goes on, but that's horrible. And that's why it usually takes several lifetimes for many people. See, one thing Prabhupada did, which is so merciful, is that he was so compassionate that he kind of cheated us. He had us to feel that you just sing and dance and chant and that's all. Yes. He had us to feel that it's very easy to go back to Godhead. Yes, it is. When we're that authentic and genuine. And so, if we really initially knew how subtle and profound and exalted the process really is, people would not even have really gotten that involved. Just like you don't hear in Bhakti 101 class, or Bhakti 101 class, you don't hear So the more, the longer you're a devotee, the more it is going to be complex. The more it's going to become difficult. But not impossible. You don't hear like that. Because it can be misunderstood. What you study in primary school is simple. What you study in high school, in college, university, is more complex. And if you have a good foundation, and if you have been genuine in primary school, then when you have more difficult subject matter, it is just more interesting and more involved, but it is not that it is impossible. It just becomes natural. That is something more evolved, more mature. So you don't expect. Someone says, well, you know, when I was in primary school, we had very simple lessons. And so now we're in the university, I don't like this. Well, we got so much more complex lessons. Well, we have to read more. Well, we have to be expected to be able to produce more. Well, we have to speak more. Well, we have to write more. It's natural. Now, the person who has gotten sufficient foundation, when it comes to the more evolved subject matter, they've already have developed learning skills, studying skills. They already are able to take tests without going to post-traumatic stress or hypertension or whatever. They've already learned how to prepare themselves and not just cram overnight. But those who haven't been so consistent, they were able somehow to endure in primary school. But now later, where it's more complex and even more subtle, they don't have the potency. And so these devas, they can't go and just enter into Vraj. Although they have so much power and so much influence, because we see some of their activities. They're all different types. We read the Mahabharata, also we find so many amazing kinds of activities. And we think of many of the devas, they are often big sense gratifiers. They have bigger parties, they're more attractive, they take samaras, they have more affairs, so many things. And so this is what is part of the material environment, where basically there is selfishness and there is sense gratification. And this is why sometimes even those in higher positions in the Svavaloka and other kind of places come down to the material world, where they have to deal more with the duality connected with the material world, with hope that in this case, this time, it won't be so much trying to engage in the comforts and enjoyment, the sense gratification, and getting drawn, you know, by the vagas, but now that they will move out of this. But it don't happen most times. And most times people come and they forget, or they get captured by the environment. And sometimes even evolved souls come into this world and they become a coward, or they become contaminated by the arena of sense gratification at this level. Sometimes great sages who go through all kinds of austerities, they've all sort of shakti influence. So they take birth in the human form and they shine to a certain extent. But then sometimes they get distracted from what their real mission was in coming in human form in this life. And so these great acharyas like Srila Prabhupada, he said they're really bounty hunters, and they come to do what? They come to reclaim. But we know Prabhupada is Sanipati Bhakta, Mantra Upasaka. So he's gone all over trying to reclaim, stimulate, remind, and take as many back as possible. And we're not to prepare them at least as much as you can, you know, for the next life. So one can read these kind of things or even hear what sometimes go on in all communities. I have some disciples who are priests and nuns. Once I was talking to one of my elder disciples, who's a nun. He said she didn't know one person for sure who was under 50 in her order, which you could definitely say was following strict principles of celibacy. Unbelievable. And in England, over one third of the priests are homosexuals. And in some orders, they're considering illicit affairs, not with the opposite sex, but what they do with the same sex, they don't consider that like a sin. But people have all kinds of ways to justify all sort of nonsense. And this is why this material world might do got the shackles, sex life, which means not just so much the physical act only, but it means so much of the lust and greed and selfishness and duplicity. All of that is also sex energy that is out of control. Some people it is out of control and it manifests more in physicality. Others it manifests more in trying to overly control, dominate others. Also, the sex energy that is not being properly transformed. Now the delicate thing is that if one is too rigid in his or her mind, consciousness, then what happens is that we don't develop the consciousness of selflessness and of love. There's only karma and prema. There's only prema, really. Prema when it comes to the three modes of mature nature, that amazing culture, environment, amazing constant influence to serve Krishna and to be selfless and to work in harmony and love. That's a part of Raj. Now, that energy is now coming to the material arena, so powerful, but now the channel has changed and is lust. And so instead of Divya Mata, divine madness, now it's insanity where one just cannot satiate, satisfy the mind and the senses. And you have such a horrible example of it here in the secular world in South Africa, where many places in the world people think, what kind of monster is going on where people are raping babies? Think of the kind of mentality we sent the other day. 40,000 rapes a month here in South Africa. Over 800 babies. 3,000 toddlers. Almost 7,000 just very, very young girls, mostly. Like, what is this? Kali Yuga is not even so advanced yet. And still such kind of things go on. And if you go all around the world and you see how it may not be as pronounced as it is here, but extremely. And so, what is that? Anger and violence and desperation. All loving energy that now has become karma instead of prema, and that same karma is what? What causes wars? What causes genocide? What causes so much fighting amongst political parties, fighting amongst religious institutions, fanaticism? All of that is actually also sex energy that is in disarray. It is all same greed, same lust that expresses itself. And so if the senses, sexual energy, also financial transparency, these two issues, prominent issues for present day Vaishnava, you look at most deviations, it's either sex deviation, the lust, promiscuous, lack of boundaries, lack of chastity, or it's finance. And each of these is my pleasure, my needs, my desires, and where's Krishna? And so when you think about it, Krishna consciousness is not difficult. Because if these things, the same kind of maya that just comes out and surfaces again and again and again. And so when there's a particular enemy that keeps appearing basically in the same ways, maya only has so many tricks. Then one would think, oh, so it's really not so difficult. You just have to see how this enemy works. But at the same time, if we take for granted how the enemy works, we take for granted how the enemy has no favors. It can affect anyone who is not protected. But then how do we get protection? Protection comes from, one, having the right desires. Because nobody ever falls down who doesn't have desire for falling. It may not be so recognizable, one doesn't want to recognize it, but when the desire for sense gratification is stronger than the desire for devotion, accountability, for integrity, then there'll be a problem. If our desires maintain stronger for acting and doing the proper thing, no question of ever any fall down. That means our fall down is our own fault, improper desires. Desires that have added up where they're stronger than the desires of devotion. Then that financial opportunity, that sexual opportunity, that can always be available, now one cannot resist. That opportunity to rob the bank now becomes available, to take an extreme case. So, Krishna says he gives acknowledgement. He also arranges for the forgiveness being able to forgive and from the heart, situated in the heart. He accommodates one to be able to remember, one to be able to forgive. He allows maya to make the suggestions. So maya enthuses the living entity. So you wanted to rob, here's an opportunity. You wanted to rape, here's an opportunity. You wanted to embezzle, here's an opportunity. And so then one falls prey to it. If there is too much in connection with their own nature that allows, that invites, that accepts. Someone offers any of us. They come and let's go to Kentucky Fried Chicken, to McDonald's. Say, what? Get out of here. You have no interest. Not even a notion to reflect on it, what to say to accept. Because when you have really replaced something with a higher taste, then even though it can be offered, even though it can be available, it's not even something you would not think of accepting, but it's disgusting. And so where one accepts, then it's a sign there's not sufficient substitution of really higher internal bhakti so that one will not fall prey to such. No one can entice you with something if you're already satisfied, balanced, then it just doesn't have an appeal. And so in this case, we see an enticement, fear, lack of authentic or lack of accountability, where there the wife of Bart killing their children, thinking that Maharaj Bart may think, because these children do not look like him, that there has been some deviation. So they're letting us know that could be a possibility, that because they have deviated, and here's the proof, now they're worried. The thought of the whole situation was against Dharma, and of course the killing of the children was against Dharma. Maharaj Yasmanta, wanting to abandon his wife and kid, being motivated by the moment for gratification, and later not wanting to take responsibility. He was in a high position, in a administrative powerful, a powerful position. And then in the case of Brihaspati and Mamata, who were relatives and had this kind of affair. Now we know, at the same time we have real devotees, like Haridas. We discussed how Bhaktivinoda talks about two kinds of religious practitioners, the Bhagavahis and the Sagravahis. The Bhagavahis are those external practitioners, the Sagravahis the internal. And then he talks about the external disciple or devotee, and then the internal. The Bharamukya, or the external, who is into all of the fame and adoration and position and is all up in face of the instructor, but in consciousness hasn't really matured. And then the Antarmukya, one who is genuine sadhu. And therefore, when even deviant opportunities are presented, one has no interest, no taste. And this is what shows the actual quality of the sadhika. One's strength shows more when there is a confrontation. One's strength shows more when there is an enticement. How much a person is really having a higher taste, how much they're really having a deeper interconnection, or to what degree they, as Brihaspati, was very learned, very endowed in position, very endowed in influence, but then lack of chastity. Deviated, and then after deviation, then did not even want to accept. So, here we see how kind Krishna is. He still makes himself available, even to such personalities, gives them responsibility, gives them opportunities, gives them position, but that position can be dangerous if somehow they're not developing the mood of like a Bhakti Pralad or a Haridas Thakur and many, many, many other, you know, Sudha Bhaktis. And there are cases, like Ranti Dev, I think you'll be reading about next, that he also was a king and he also had position, but he wasn't a deviant. And even when offered boons, he didn't say, well, yeah, now I've undergone this austerity, and you've tested me, so, you know, I deserve this. That he was so kind, Ranti Dev, it didn't matter to him, you know, was it a brahmana, was it a sudra, was it a chandala, he gave them what he had joyfully. Not even with grudge. Because he was so Krishna conscious, he was seeing Krishna in so many opportunities. So for him to serve and to give was not a problem, because he's accepting that Krishna knows my situation. And so if this individual has come and in need, then I should facilitate. And so we see that such Sudha Bhaktas were so special that these same demigods and great persons like we're talking about were amazed that they wanted to test and they wanted to study and they wanted to see what really happens, how it works. And so they came in disguise attempting Ranti Dev or making themselves available to offer something. He asked for something. He gave to them and they saw that in case he gave willingly, gladly. The difference between the internal connection, internal position. So some external situation was there, but it didn't matter. He still was consistent. Some external situation was there in the case of Haridas Thakur, where the prostitute comes. See, in Brihaspati's case, in Dasmati's case, they became overwhelmed, and then they pursued. In Haridas' case, he was overwhelmed in terms of approach by the prostitute and still didn't give in. Even after several opportunities where he could have. But instead, he transformed her. No sense. And so this is, you know, a pretty awesome section of Bhagavatam. We read these kinds of stories. But it also really helps us to tune in a little closer of just how dangerous being a mature body is. How powerful the mind can be. Even Brihaspati knew so much that he was a scholar. Even though he had so much influence, so much responsibility. But his senses were so overwhelming, he wasn't even thinking about the shame. You see, sometimes once his senses become so overwhelming, not even thinking fully, what is the consequence of this? Later, what can be the ramifications, implications of all of this? They're just thinking, I want enjoyment. And then they have to suffer tremendous type of consequences. With internal connection, you know, Krishna, we depend as in carried through Krishna world. I'm firm. And then he had Nilayas. Sometimes one may add. And so he started explaining, mentioning, just see how sinful she is. Every time a customer goes in, I'm going to put a rock. You'll see just how much of it is vouching, this woman. And so here he had, again, a show of external strength. And even though he was okay at first, but he was so harsh in how he was thinking of someone who was in their own crazy life and so much, pretty much, desiring, because he meditated so much in that way. And later the prostitute heard about this, she became so much regretful, with so much compunction, that not only is her life such a hellish life, but she's even been a disturbance, you know, to a saintly person. And he, of course, changed by feeling this sense of guilt. But then the Brahmin, opposite, fell down, got entangled. And so, the right thing must be done in the right consciousness. Otherwise, it also brings trouble. There's a story of a yogi who was meditating in the bush, like in the wilderness somewhere. And he wasn't personal in the meditation, but he was in his meditation, and all of a sudden he heard this noise in the bush. And he got so disturbed, the tiger, the snake, what is that? And running out of the bush, this lady really dressed up, very sensually, running for sex life, and just practically knocked him over and kept running. then sometime later, she came back, same path, she saw him, and she offered, you know, respectful obeisance. He was furious. Just some hours ago, you were running. So I was running for sense gratification, you didn't even see me. You practically knocked me over. And now you are trying to be reverential, and you're offering respect. Nonsense person, you know. She came back next, when she came back later, the clothes were not so fixed, her hair was untangled, but instead she offered a business. So she apologized how this subject, this goal of meeting with her paramour was so fixed in her mind that she couldn't see anything, hear anything. She was just running to meet with this person in a surreptitious way. And so he realized that if he could be as pinpointed as she was for sense gratification in his devotion, he'd be much, much more advanced. That she was so fixed for sense gratification that nothing was going to deter her. Even to the point of seeing this sadhu, no question of offering obeisances, not even noticing him, she practically knocked him over. And then later she came back, and he was furious. And so here, he was nervous when he thought it was a tiger or a snake, and so meditation wasn't so firm. And then he was so angry because that she had practically knocked him over. So he realized that she was quite fixed. But she was fixed from karma. And so the energy or the dedication, the anxiety, is there. And we want it to be there. We want it to be the dedication, the anxiety, and the attention for Krishna. for service, the lotus feet of the divine couple. So we don't have to create a certain powerful capacity of focus. We have to focus in the right way. Because we do know when it's something we want, we can get so fixed, so pinpointed. So Brihaspati was so determined, even the previous son in the womb said no. Brihaspati was angry and he cursed him. And then impregnated, you know, his own child. So he's going against business principles, being checked and being warned, but the desire was so strong, he said, no, I'm going to do this anyway. And then, of course, we understand why, you know, he is not one of those devotees who interact with Krishna in Braj, or why he's not one of those special agents who comes in the eternal entourage of Mahaprabhu when Krishna has these very exceptional types of pastimes. At the same time, he is a part of the Vedic paradigm. These Brahma, Indra, etc. Now we know that sometimes Brahma goes right back to the spiritual world. And we know that sometimes from that position, then there becomes more and more association with the most mature nature, that sometimes there becomes a de-escalation. Can happen. Now, after all that was said, Bhaktisiddhanta said something very interesting. I have to worry, I can't get the exact words of what he says, but I'll give the essence. Is that one can never really fully get the conception of sex life out of their existence, out of their consciousness, because union, most integral aspect of the nature of the soul. So, Bhaktisiddhanta being a nice brahmachari, even Bhakti to know that they have many children have pure devotees. And they are the same as well as the Goswami, who are engaged in services, you know, as manjaris, etc. But the difference between water and oil is that both cases, no, it's liquid. Difference. So the difference between union, because in the spiritual body, the nature of the original sarup is everything is union. There doesn't have to be sex life based on what is normally understood in the material body, genital connection. Is that one sense can perform the activities of all other senses. And so therefore, all interactions are interactions of tremendous love and very powerful sambandha relationship of union, of sharing, etc. So, again, we see how the material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual. And so, therefore, we must become more and more controlled of the senses, understand we're not the body, and then we're understanding how there is Marhuya Ras, and we hear and we understand that there is conjugal Ras, where there is lawless love, not the bureaucracy of formality, of even of the bureaucracy of marriage, probably here. So there's always the energy, desire, there's always the activity, the agitation. Question is it agitation based on lust, or is it Divya Mara, the divine madness, agitation based on selflessness and service, etc. The gopis are so strong in serving through Krishna in all kind of ways, not because they're thinking of their sense gratification, because they know and they're totally convinced that they can serve Krishna the best. So it's really because of their desire to protect and make sure that the best service is done for Krishna. So they're the most selfless. But in the material energy, material bodies, that is the oil, it's not the water. And that is all the energy for gratification. And as one becomes a yogi, this is why in New Age circles, they even have more promiscuous activities than sometimes in general populace. Because they go through all of these austerities and techniques and practices, sometimes tantric. And so what happens is that it even stimulates even more of the attraction between the opposite sexes, and sometimes you see the same sex. Kundalini stimulates all these things. There's almost, it then causes one to become more excited, it causes one to become more, the senses, you know, more demanding. So without the culture of bhakti, whether one is just interested in bhukti, mukti, siddhi, there will be problems. You know, Sabara Muni was a powerful yogi, but he couldn't do what, you know, Haridasa called him. Dvarasa Muni was a powerful yogi. At the same time, Ambarish was a real, you know, Antarmukhya. Had more of the internal potency, humility, which was strength, dedication, and dependence. And so the same thing, history repeats itself. You know, what has gone on in the earlier times on the Varnashram Dharma arrangement, what goes on in present day institutions of Vaishnava expressions, some of the same thing. Is that how much are we simultaneously doing so many things externally, but understanding that the most important internal is being nourished, there'll be guaranteed steady success. If one has one or the other has to be sacrificed, the external to be sacrificed. But because of the nature of modernity in Kali Yuga, we often evaluate things too much based on the external. And therefore when there is deviation, we get completely overwhelmed because we evaluate things on the wrong basis in the first place. But it really comes down to that Krishna is knowing, and he's in the heart, and he cannot be bribed, he cannot be flattered, he cannot be ingratiated where he just tolerates because we've ingratiated him. We ingratiate him, we read a lot of books, we do a lot of food for life, we build a lot of projects. We fully accept that if we're giving that also with love and devotion. But if not, then we get some, you know, some little punya this way, that way, some opportunity or greater chance later in this life or whatever. But that discussion we were discussing the other day about Shiva, how Guru Tapa and Shiva Tapa are somewhat similar. That there is a mercy potency with Chidi and a mercy potency without Chidi. And how Jagannath Das Babaji mentioned that sometimes one is given distinction, adoration, and position as part of the mercy potency of mercy with Chidi. And then that either helps or reveals the personal situation. And so sometimes we have to be careful about distinction coming our way. Make sure that we are accepted in the right way. Or that distinction can be the source, or position can be the source of our failure. And so we mentioned how Shiva has this interesting way of doing what Shiva deals with the ghosts and hobgoblins and so many entities. And so we see Ravana and Vritrakasura and Bakasura, they were very dedicated to Lord Shiva. But they got cheated. They got the cheating out. Because Ravana did not worship Lord Ram, then he was destroyed. Ultimately, he was not protected by Shiva. So that means Shiva was not fully accepting what he was giving in the higher sense. Dasha told him he was being dissatisfied. But the ultimate outcome was disaster. So we shouldn't read such things like this and consider if Brahma has trouble, Indra has issue. If Brihaspati has this show, then hey, what's the big deal? But little me has a little phlegm every now and then, has a little problem. What's the big deal? I mean, after all, you know, these guys are much more down. But no, how about us preparing us to go even to a much higher level? Not that we should have any kind of arrogance or things like that, but he's preparing us to have the greatest level of simplicity and dedication, which means that we have to not be aligned and attracted to any of those kind of things where they can interfere with the ultimate, you know, pure love. Any questions on the comments? Anyone have?
And they're supposed to be able not to play into it.
So sometimes they play into it, and other times they set it up. You know, so that it happens. And that's why, especially in the case of lawyers and doctors and psychiatrists, people who are in this kind of position, where people come to them in need, and they reveal themselves, they become vulnerable, you know, in so many ways. And so it's expected that, like a parent, supposed to be considerate and concerned, and not feel they have to own or experience, you know, that particular person. And so this is the case. I mean, this came out, but the real thing is, how many other thousands of situations have been like that, and people have not, you know, been aware of it, or they've let it go in such ways. Any other questions? Yes. Krishna, in so many mechanisms, especially in the heart, knows the background and the history of the individual. Also, as we are doing the day-to-day devotional activity, according to the quality, making certain kind of impressions on the subtle body, which is the mind, intelligence, ego, etc. So when the faculty shut down, now the quality of whatever the subtle body is activates. So if the devotion in the waking state and the active state has been strong, there's no problem in the mind being able to focus in a devotional way. Krishna will arrange, and has already arranged, because when we are doing devotion, it's like we're putting something in a bank account. And now, sometimes we're putting some counterfeit. Sometimes we're putting a lot of coins. And other times, it's real quality, deposit, investment. So, at the time of death, that investment kicks in, whatever that investment is, along with the mercy of Guru. But that mercy also is accessible and acts according to, you know, the deposit. If somebody's been putting a lot of hypocritical Mishra deposits, then they will not connect with the same kind of mercy that will be able to give them the chance to go back to Godhead or to think of Krishna fully. It doesn't happen. A certain amount of mercy brings certain amount of effort connected, you know, with a certain amount of mercy. We never can like fully be 100% on in Kali Yuga unless we come in directly from the spiritual world. So whatever we're doing, we've had some tenders, has some doubts, some fears, some other loss, some, you know, weaknesses there. And so we're always knowing at the end of the day that we are begging, desirous for the mercy. So much so that we should think that every one of us will fall down unless there is mercy. That none of us should think that we're strong enough to maintain, because Maya knows exactly how to allure you. Maya knows exactly where every single devotee is vulnerable or weak, and will set up gradual, direct way to affect your network. Some cases may be money, some cases it may be sex life, some cases it may be power, maybe distinction, maybe influence, you know. Some cases may be fear, maybe depression. I mean, whatever, Maya will try to find some way to present that. Either stop you or slow you down. So it's only because Maya has a boss as we are taking more shelter Maya as well. And that's why it's not really amazing that these devas fall or have deviant or act in a way that goes against Dharma, or that people in present-day society, even in our own Vaishnava order, from time to time, you know, we have some type of deviation. What's amazing is that in some cases, we have no deviation. When the body is prone for deviation, programmed for deviation, when the material environment is programmed for deviation, what's amazing is that some people are able to keep fearful enough, careful enough, prayerful enough, that they don't deviate. But most people will have problems in coming. I mean, you think about the thousands of people who propagate your initiation to. It's not that he didn't know that majority of people wouldn't be able to hold up to it. A guy gave sannyas, the youngest sannyas is 19, 20 years old. You know, Western person, 20 years old, taking sannyas at a time when their passions are stronger than ever, you know. But some people have been consistent year after year. Most haven't. So it wasn't Prabhupada's weakness that he couldn't instill enough potency. It's just that his mercy and blessings and guidance is there, but still one has to put themselves under the shelter to remain free. If it's raining, you have to go under the shelter, otherwise you go out, you're going to get wet. And so if you go out, it's heavy rain, you get wet, yeah, you remove yourself from the shelter. And the proof and sign of it, you get wet. So you remove yourself from the protection. Any last question? They have fear, if they have more fear of Maya, if you have really fear of something, you're much more careful not to come close or associate too close with it, too intimately with it. We have to keep having more and more reminding ourselves and more awareness of what is the goal that we're really trying to be about. We have to be much more reading and studying systematically, reflect on the life of the Acharya, about the amazing pastimes and things that go on in our real home, so that we become more excited. We want to, when we're doing the kirtan, running to it, Baba's running Krishna. We have to be one to run, generally because of something that's available. Oh, I want to be there, I want that. And we also have to know what it means not to run away. To understand, what does it mean to fall into Maya and to deviate? So, now you can also see how hard it is that practically everything that's being sold in today's society, from a condominium to a viral to a pencil, is being sold, advertised to stimulate people, you know, sexually, or to enhance or to capitalize on their greed. And capitalism itself is designed to cause people to want and viciously go after things that they don't need. As I've explained, the success of capitalism, the more you get people to demand and want what they really don't need, or to get them to think that they need, that it means the more that you capitalize off greed, the more the system runs, where people are just trying to get more and more whatever they want. So now, we are present-day sadhus, we see the earlier sadhus, or demigods would have trouble, so what is our status? When there's even more bombardment from newspaper, from bulletin board, from radio, from TV, from dress styles, on and on and on. What is the hope? Well, that's why it's so merciful that Lord Jana and Lord Chaitanya have come in this time, giving this type of dispensation, knowing that it's so difficult. And therefore, so much of devotional service, this has to be making that connection, being genuine, enduring, and holding on, maintaining humility, and one will be protected. And we're not all kinds of floods and problems, you know, can prevail. And then you are told, oh, and so marry, but sex life only for procreation. Here's a wonderful man you've married, wonderful woman you've married. Oh yes. And by the way, only for cookies. Somebody gives you this car, and they say, oh, the keys. And you know, you can only drive, you know, 38 miles an hour. You can only drive at 38 miles an hour. Oh, really? And it's a sports car? Not impossible. But what has needed is that we have to be able to be more loving, and then we will not be so much captured by the love. We try to stop the love, it doesn't get stopped. Everyone has so much energy and so much potential because we are dynamic entities. But as we have more genuine affection and love, then it doesn't have to then just go to the genital. It doesn't have to go to the lower area. It comes to the heart and the mind. So sometimes people are so much not communicating, not appreciating, not having heart connection, and therefore all that gets stored up, and now it just has to go someplace. But see, in Vedic culture, also, we say, well, what about these guys? Is that in spiritual paradigm, is that everything also can be an expression of association and union. Like husband and wife, they don't have a strong loving relationship where they can really benefit by reading together, doing service together, by eating together, by looking at each other's eyes. They should be able to have connection, fulfillment, happiness, when the love is deep. When it's not, then it only comes mainly in one kind of way. And then people are so much more into the physical because they're not really appreciating each other, buying gifts, receiving gifts, sharing minds, really being there as a team. And so then they feel so separate and there's so much need for union, it all becomes physical, 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 physical. The relationship is deeper and there's not so much of a need for so much of the physicality. And because there's so much need for physicality, it's a sign that there has to be greater way, it has to be greater emphasis on greater appreciation beyond just the body gain. And so whether we're devotees or non-devotees, as we have more genuine selflessness, love, and affection, then we're able to control the senses more. And we're able, then, when there's procreation, then we bring in such powerful divine entities. Because then it's real union. Now people are having union without union. They're having union with somebody else, like Vyaspati, somebody else's wife, or with someone who they're not really ready to be accountable for, like Dusmata. And it can affect sometimes the quality, most times, the quality of the progeny. Imagine the beauty is that when a man and woman have married for blessings and have not had illicit connections previously, that they have gotten some scholars, and so they've been blessed by guru, blessed by sadhu, they're dedicated in serving together for trying to raise consciousness on the planet, they're connected with the parampara in such ways, they really have great appreciation for each other, and they now come forth and bring forth a child. Can you imagine the kind of entity that's going to want to connect with that particular parent, knowing that that's rare? So you're going to get very high level souls that will be able to really to save us all, make a huge difference in the quality of devotion, or the culture of devotion at this time. Otherwise, inauspiciously arranged, then again, we draw the presence, you know, the presence according to that. But when we do make a mistake, one should at least be honest, clear, determined enough, I made a mistake and I ain't going to make no mistakes like this again. In these cases where mistake was made and it, you know, then they tried to deny it. So, okay, they come back again, the demigod again, some other kind of post, some other kind of place. And if sadhus have that, then, you know, we'll chant Hare Krishna, but we'll come back another lifetime, trying this again. There are distinct times when things happen in our own society that's like categorizing. Demigod or devotee? Which are you really going to do the rest of it? We get the opportunity to go and make a choice. So many of us are going to have those opportunities ourselves. You know Krishna, you're calling Krishna. But you really want Krishna? Or do you want what Krishna arranges and what Krishna's about and what he does? You want to be somehow enjoying some of Krishna's kingdom by having a nice position and influence like some of these devas, but they only get so much, or they can go so far? Or do we really want Krishna? and Krishna will allow Maya to offer us. What do you believe? Anyway, let us have this Divya Mara, divine madness, where that mind is agitated and the senses are agitated, and how we can serve, how we can put on the Ratiyatra, how we can increase the Namahatas, how we can increase, you know, the Deity service, how we can involve more and more people to understand the Krishna consciousness for them, how we can have better relationships with Brahmachari, better relationships, you know, in the ashrams, how we can have better kind of teamship amongst the different temples, amongst the leaders, how we can let the Namahatas just grow and grow and grow, reach out in their communities in more ways. We agitate the mind more in this way, then the energy goes into something very healthy. And when we lose some of that kind of agitation, then it goes other places. And we find ourselves, oh, we've had some seemingly fall down. But it meant that we have not remained under the shelter. And now Krishna is trying to help us by exposing us in a certain way, by having some abrupt thing happen in our life, which is really a call to get deeper under the connection of the shelter. But then once that happens, in some cases we accept, in some cases, you know, we even don't. If I have to fight it in Cape Town, then about half an hour. It's confounded, charge of divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sirubhati, Vaishnava Koti.
We adore the Bhakti Theatre Swami Maharaj.